Today's Minnesota Reads is made possible by the Bookstore at Fitgers, a full-service book and toy store located on the bottom floor of Fitgers on Superior Street, online at fitgersbookstore.com. This week we're talking about a book called Harriman vs. Hill, Wall Street's Great Railroad War. Not the kind of title you want to perhaps say three times fast. Larry Haig is the author, and he joins us to talk about his book this morning here on Northland Morning. Hi, Larry. Good to have you with us.
Good morning, Lisa.
I looked through the book and enjoyed it and was anxious to hear more about it. My grandfather was an engineer on the Great Northern, so railroads have kind of a soft spot in my heart. And I know this is a little bit off topic, but I had to ask you anyway, why are so many people just fascinated by trains and railroads?
You're right. Certainly far more than airline travel, which has lost its elegance in our era. Railroads connect to our communities. The trains pass through our neighborhoods, both to good and bad effect. But all of us have memories of, if we're fortunate enough, of our first railroad trip. And it has a romance and a connection to our communities that I don't think any other form of transport would have.
There's a kind of an elegance to it, not to mention that although it was faster, it was still kind of a way, in a way that you can't do in a car when you're driving. You could kick back and really enjoy the scenery as you traveled.
Oh, you could. You could get a sense for each community you traveled through. And this book is not so much about passenger travel on railroads as it is the success, the efficiency, and the rebirth of freight transport on railroads. And Mr. Hill and Mr. Harriman were masters at efficiency and profitability, and really delivered to each of their communities great benefit in that regard.
And there is so much of a sense that I don't think we can understand in this day and age about how significant the opening of the West to rail travel was, because in our time now, trains are just the things that stop us at the intersection.
Mm-hmm.
At the beginning of your book, you talked about, you, and I'm going to quote here, all the elements of American business at its best and worst come into play in the account of this epic battle whose effects echo through our economy at this day. How do those things echo?
Well, certainly the last third of this story is dedicated to the question, how big is too big? And at the time of this story in 1901, you would have witnessed a great consolidation of overcapacity in the railroad industry in the United States. There had been periods of boom and bust in the last half of the 19th century throughout the railroad industry. The overbuilding of the railroad industry essentially caused many of the great recessions and depressions of the last half of the 19th century. So in 1901, you come to this, as it were, a culminating point of consolidation. And the question that Teddy Roosevelt and the Justice Department had to resolve in 1901 was, if you have a monopoly, essentially, of railroads in the western United States, how does that affect pricing and fairness in the marketplace? Because at the time, if you were a farmer in northern Minnesota, you either brought your crop to the market, to the elevator, either by horse-drawn wagon or the railroad. There was no commercial airline transportation. There were no barges. There were no trucks. So railroads were it. And so that's one of the big questions this book poses, is that for the first time in American history, the government had to make some decisions about how to carry out the Sherman Antitrust Act. And we're still faced with that today as we look at, Apple and Google are monopolies.
One of the other things that I noticed right off, and what's so fascinating about your book, is that you can kind of read it in two ways. You can read it as a historical account, and you can read it in ways where some of the things happening in current day are really resonating. You talked about the story being about character, about the volatile mix of analytics, emotion, and ethics, or the lack thereof, and you talked about how folks, you know, how these people were managing the capital of others that was entrusted to them and how they chose to compete. And the first things I thought of was Enron, the real estate crash that sent the economy into a tailspin, Bernie Madoff. Do you see those kinds of parallels in this day and age, and how do they relate?
Well, and I also I do, and I also see the parallels in terms of some of the outstanding leaders we have in American business today, which I think is that we don't devote enough time to. And one of the reasons I pursued this story is I wanted to examine the character of James J. Hill and Edward Harriman under stress. And the defining moment for each of them, the defining public moment, was their behavior, their actions, their decisions in the so-called Northern Pacific Corner, which remains and always will remain, because corners are illegal today, the most famous corner in the history of the New York Stock Exchange. So one gets a chance in this story to immerse oneself in 1901 to be there through the medium of narrative history and to get a sense for how Mr. Heron and Mr. Hill made their crucial decisions during those four tumultuous days in May of 1901.
You also talked about the corner causing the first modern-day panic on the New York Stock Exchange, but the most interesting part I found was that it was mediated by the adversaries themselves. So they came together to look for a solution instead of the government stepping in.
Well, and essentially there was no government supervision of the stock exchange in 1901. In fact, the stock exchange itself, the New York Stock Exchange, was a club. It was not a legally incorporated enterprise. So you have this weird experience in 1901 of seeing something resolved on the stock exchange without virtually any involvement by the federal government or the stock exchange itself. And it makes you value, I think, some of the advances we've made in government regulation since that time. There was no Federal Reserve at the time of the story. J.P. Morgan was the de facto head of the Federal Reserve, if you will. He embodied that. There was no Securities and Exchange Commission. So it's it gives you a chance to see how human beings under great stress can marshal the intelligence and the will to solve problems themselves. Not always smoothly, not always to the fairness of all parties concerned, but it was resolved.
One last thing, Larry. We're kind of running short on time, but I had to ask because this character in your story is so much a part of, at least his name is so much a part of things up here in the Northland. What was Jay Cook's role in all of this?
Well, Jay Cook was one of the great financiers in the history of in American history. Helped fund the union effort in the Civil War, and then based on his reputation in that, the early founders of the Northern Pacific turned to him to finance the early construction of the Northern Pacific in the 1870s. The Northern Pacific's problem was that it did not receive any cash outlays from the federal government to construct the early portions of that rail. It was all done with land grants, land twice the size of the state of Indiana. And so they had to raise cash fast, and they turned to Jay Cook. And that led to the overselling of the Northern Pacific in the start of the early 1870s led to its collapse and bankruptcy in 1873. And it's not a pretty story, and unfortunately Jay Cook was an infamous part of that collapse.
Larry, I wish we had more time to talk about this book. It absolutely was fascinating. And again, there are so many things that it just begs so many questions about, could people do that in this day and age? It's a wonderful read. And thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you so much for inviting me, Lisa. Have a great day.
Larry Haig is the author of a book called Harriman versus Hill, Wall Street's Great Railroad War. Minnesota Reads is produced at KUMD with funding provided by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and also by the bookstore at Fitgers, a full-service book and toy store located on the bottom floor of Fitgers on Superior Street. Online at fitgersbookstore.com.